CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Welcome to the fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberta Biggs. Joining me today, live in studio, Miss Tay Allen.
Hello, hello.
How's it going?
Oh, fabulous.
We have been having some beautiful weather here in Austin.
Are we going to talk about the weather?
We have to.
I mean, why?
Because it's been fucking gorgeous.
I mean, it's been gorgeous, but Tay Allen's on your couch. You can talk
to me about
the weather?
I realize that, but fuck, come on. Look, if there's anything I can do, I got to pull something local as like an opening kind of thing, because fuck, it's been gorgeous. I'm sorry I say that now. I'm only saying that now because I know that like over the horizon is going to be just like this storm of death or something. That's how it always happens here.
Yes. Storm of death is very true. I'm actually going to a ball on Friday night, like a masquerade ball.
What the fuck?
Yes.
Hold on a sec. Let's rewind again. How did you – I realize we haven't gotten to any interview kind of thing yet, but I'm very intrigued. One, how did you get invited? Okay, explain the ball.
Sure.
Miss Cinderella here.
Oh, my God. Thank you for calling me Cinderella. I like to say Sleeping Beauty because she was tall and had broad shoulders.
Very true.
But I'll take Cinderella.
Well, I'm saying, like, if you're saying the ball, you know, that, like,
yes.
My brain goes to, you know, either Belle or whatever ball it is. But the idea of just, like, this very fancy kind of thing. And
yeah.
Then you put masquerade in front of it. And I'm like, great. Well, that's even way more fancy. Okay, so go on.
Thank you. Well, I am very lucky to have this wonderful friend. I'll leave her nameless for now because she's not as open to the internet as I am. But she has this gorgeous garden mansion. Like, think Great Gatsby. It's up in the hills. They've got a giant chessboard where you can play the in-person chess. Imagine having that at your house. Like, gorgeous columns.
Who is your friend? The Queen of Hearts?
It looks like the Queen of Hearts, but I'm not trying to be Alice right now, okay? I don't need
I'm
to go
saying,
to no
like land. You imagine, like, oh, my friend, she has a mansion and a chessboard where the peasants play as all chess pieces.
Yes, this is definitely like the most sophisticated I get, because as we know, normally I'm BOC status, but she is super fancy and for some reason has taken a liking to me. I'm so lucky. So
I'm not laughing at you. I'm just laughing at the idea of just like going into this place and just seeing this giant fucking I don't mean to, I'm not even insulting your friend, because your friend's probably an amazing person.
Uh-huh.
But just like, that seems so like over the top, right?
Yeah, I can get up a picture,
because that's sort of like, because you know there's always a joke of like, when it comes to certain like sophistication and rich people,
mm-hmm.
and like one of them is the giant chessboard,
yeah.
You know, kind of thing.
No, it is. I'm going to show you a picture, and I'm going to try and hold it up to the camera so that the
worst case scenario, we will
send this picture of this lady's house out afterwards.
Yeah, we may put a link in the show notes. We may not. It all depends. It all depends on what we can get and what is comfy enough.
Privacy issues, but yes, I'll let you describe that to the audience as I'm bringing it up to the camera.
All right, the best way I can pitch this is that think of the fanciest place you've ever seen and then double and triple that theory, because ultimately that looks like, that does look like I just saw a garden, I saw chairs, I saw a terrace.
Oh yeah. So there's multiple terraces, and I mean, you know, multiple places to make out, let's be honest. But yes, it is so beautiful.
Okay.
So thank you for telling me that it was my princess moment. Here's my problem. I had a princess dress, and I have a date for this thing, and when I put it on, it looked a whole lot like a wedding dress, and I'm not trying to scare the bejesus out of this person.
No, of course not.
And it really finally did, and there could be some high grasses in the woods of this beautiful castle. Oh, I want to be fancy. You are fancy, hot beverages. So my other option is this super low-cut, black halter, like, sex kitten, high slit up the front. So I wanted to be this princess, but that dress is just not going to work. So instead, I'm going, like, super Jessica Rabbit skanky.
I don't, wow. I mean, I don't know what kind of party it is. Just because it's at a fancy place does not necessarily dictate that it's at a super fancy party.
Well, it is a Mardi Gras ball.
Okay. We're so far you're, okay. If it didn't have that ball attached to it, my brain would go, oh, totally, you're fine. Mm-hmm. But because there's a ball, and because you'd mentioned masquerade at the top of the show,
yeah,
and then you showed just that area, I'm like, man, I think you're fine. You'll probably mm-hmm. be totally A-okay, cool. But it's just like, wow, I'd be intimidated to go in that kind of place, like mm-hmm. dressed like, because typically if you see me outside, if you never watched the live show, that's totally fine. But mm-hmm. typically I'm wearing jeans and a hoodie and some random dork T-shirt. In fact, speaking of Rooster Teeth, I have Memory is the Key, one of the things from Red vs. Blue. Like, I'll typically have this on. But whenever I have to dress up, I'm like, I'm always super intimidated because sometimes mm-hmm. I feel that I either underdress or overdress, and I can't find that, like, happy medium.
Well, I would like to put out there that I think overdressing is kind of coming in vogue now, where some people just, like, really love to get dressed up. And honestly, this is what this is. This girl's 28, and she just...
She's 28?
Yes.
Is this her place?
No, it's her family. It's her family.
It's still insane. Okay, wow. Yeah, yeah. Okay. No. Sorry, my brain goes, like, she's 28. Like, my brain goes, she's 28 and she's running here? What the...
Yeah.
Did she develop some, like, really crazy, like, net thing I just didn't hear about? Is she, like, the creator of, like, of everything on the planet?
Oh, my God, right, the creator of everything. That would be awesome. But, yeah, you know, I think she just... She has this great place, and it's just an opportunity for everyone to dress up.
Yeah,
totally.
Because I think
we all like to, and we get so few chances to in the modern world. Like, I mean, really, everything, especially in Austin, is so casual. So, yeah,
See, just looking forward to it. For me, it's the exact opposite, because I have like here in Austin, for sure, I can just kind of, you know, be whatever, and I don't mind. Mm-hmm. But typically when I have to dress up, it's because of a family event, either a wedding or some type of gathering. And so, like, I'm always, I love my mother to death, I love my family to death. My mother always tends to freak out a little bit more so when it's her side of the family. And I don't think I think she does it subconsciously without realizing it, because she'll always, like, we're playing a trip in May for my cousin's getting married in Mexico. And my mother had called me a couple days ago and said, like, all right, you know, you got to buy a suit, you got to buy all this stuff, you got to make mm-hmm. sure you have these sort of things. It's like she always gets a really, not critical, but she always, like, calls me, like, you know, months in advance. Like, it's in May and we're in February. Mm-hmm. And she's like, buy all the stuff now. I'm just like, okay. Because, like, if you don't have it, you're not going to have my time. Make sure you ever get things directly. So it's always funny that, like all of my occasions are like, I have to always hyper dress up. And I think about it, like, I think it's rare that I ever dress up for anything outside of family events. Maybe that's why. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're absolutely right. There's not a whole lot of time to dress up in there.
Well, I can put this out there. As most of Chat Realm knows, and I think you know, I'm going to host a South by Southwest party at my house for Diamond Club.
Oh, rock and roll.
Yes, because I live close to downtown Austin. I have a house there. So maybe we make that fancy themed and we give you a chance to dress up. I was going to make it keg themed.
And she was like, let's make it fancy. I was gonna say, fuck it, you know, come in your pants. I don't give a shit. But you're like, no,
let's put it to the people who are in the chat right now.
Put it down.
Fancy or keg?
Okay, explain. Okay, obviously fancy we've already gone in depth in. Define keg.
So by keg, I mean that one time in college when I was naked and I did a 42-second keg stand and then threw up over myself the next morning. That's what I mean.
All right, is that a true story?
Actually, it is. The omelet is what did me in. I ate an omelet the next morning.
All right,
and I barfed.
Give me all the story. You've got to go into story now. Right, you can't drop that, like, little dime and say, oh, yeah, that was, like, the time I was naked. I drank, like, no, you got to back it up. You got to rewind, go back, you know, move the playhead, boom, go.
Yes. This is a great story. So in college, I was a theater major, and at USC, theater parties were actually kind of cool. Like, we had the LAPD helicopters break up a 2,000-person party once, like, and I ran them. So obviously, think about one of my music videos, but then add drunk people. Oh, wait, that's already happening in all my music videos. Never mind. But yes, so theater parties were cool. So we would come up with these themes, and the theme of this night was reality TV. And so everyone had to dress up as some kind of reality TV show.
All right, hold on. What did you dress up as? I think I have an idea, but say it.
Oh, I would like to hear your idea.
Only because you mentioned naked, I want to believe that you came in. What is that fucking reality show where it's like naked and alone in the woods? Or
Naked and Afraid?
Is that what it's called?
You're so sweet. I am 26, so it's been like 4 or 5 years since I was in college.
Okay, okay. No. I this is honestly my only, you know, my real perception of reality television is still stuck in, and this is like, this tells you how much reality television I ever watched, period. My version, like, the only two reality TV shows I even roughly know is Deadliest Catch.
Okay.
Because I watched a shit ton of that. And The Real World. Mm-hmm. And my mental image of The Real World is still stuck with, like, Puck and shit like that.
Okay.
That's how far, that, you know, see, we talk about, like, ages like that. Like, I don't, like, I, yeah. Reality television is like, bleh. So, okay, so what'd you come as then?
Yes, and then I want to get back talking about reality television, because I love reality television, and I may have a reality TV show coming out. So that's exciting. But yes. Oh, I have yet to go to a theater party, sadly. Russellberry, South by Southwest. I'm having a theater party, and the theme is keg. We're fine.
Or anyway, fancy.
Or fancy.
Or fancy. Maybe both will work. Maybe we'll split the middle and go keg casual.
Oh my god, that's hilarious.
I don't even know what that means.
That's it. The keg casual.
What does that even mean?
It doesn't matter. If anything I had made sense, none of you would want to listen to me.
All right,
me anymore.
Back to theater party. Okay, yes. Reality TV show.
Yes. So the theme is reality TV, and so I dress up as Extreme Makeover.
Oh,
and that was the show where they would, like, take women and do all the plastic surgery, and then, like, 6 months later, they look completely different.
Oh, God,
so
I
all
about
I
that.
Had was one line of bandage here and one line of bandage over my crotch.
Oh.
And then I had lines I had drawn in Sharpie
to
show stitches and had, like, bruises, but, like, very, very naked.
Right.
And I got so wasted. It was freshman year, of course. And I did a 42-second keg stand only in two bandages that then pretty much had me, like, I think in a pile of beer surrounded by gay guys for the rest of the night.
Interesting. that's a night. I mean, I don't even have any. I mean, I was a dork in college. I mean, I'm a dork now, and I was a dork then. Like, I think the most
beanies are the worst.
I don't wear beanies.
Why am I trying to wear
them? I do not know. No. She wore more than what Tay is just. Apparently malt liquor poured in some events they're talking about.
Oh, nice.
God, now I'm just thinking in my head of what. But because, like, my you had exciting parties. Like, I think the most exciting party I had gone to was at a dorm, and, like, in that dorm, we're just walking around, kind of just chatting with friends. And I think the craziest thing I saw was some people doing opium in their room, and that was weird enough to me, because, like, I'd seen a lot of weed and stuff like that. Like, opium was, like, well, because opium is, you know, I mean, opium is that drug you read about in English class that, like, you know, like, all the writers, like, we went to the opium den and in China, and, like, that's where opium resides in, like, the drug knowledge in my head. It's never been that. We just, like, look around, it's like, you know, there's this, like, sticky tar, something like, are they fucking smoking opium? I'm just like, more amazed that the opium was there. But
I have no idea what any drugs are, really. Like,
really?
I know I seem like a cool party girl.
Well,
snowshoe. But, like, I can barely smoke weed. I get just really intense about
I honestly don't do anything. But, like, I've been around enough people that do enough. Like the weird thing about being kind of the dork and geek I am, the joke I always make. I'm not sure if you've ever seen the movie SLC Punk before.
I haven't, but I guess I need to, because I love all things dorky and nerdy.
You do. It's a great movie. But in the movie, there's this character called, like, John the Mod. He's sort of this guy that goes between the different parties, whatever. And the joke is that, because he has, like, the best bud, the best weed and shit like that.
Yeah.
The joke I make is that I'm kind of like that, because I float between a lot of different crowds, not just dorks and geek, but even, like, you know, new wave people and dark wave and goth and whatever. You know, like anytime I'm at Elysium and there's like, you know, a concert going on or like a Came at the M concert, I always feel like I don't not wear enough leather.
Yeah. I like those kind of concerts, but not like the leather ones. I know what you mean. I like the ethereal stuff and the whimsical stuff, or like Vampire Ball, I'm all about it. But when it gets super leathery and piercing, I just
hang. usually I'm there, but I'm in this, and so I'm like, I always feel, you know, like we joke about being underdressed. I was like, man, I'm not wearing a fucking, you know, fucking leather and black.
Yeah.
But I still love the band, so I don't give a shit. You know, I still, you know, I still love Combi Christ, whatever. So I'm just, I'm still not, you know, I never feel alt enough, even though I'm like, you know, I'm well aware of everything going on. I'm staring at the laptop saying, oh, cool, they're using Pro Tools, or, oh, hey, rock and roll, I let Mac there. And then I'm hearing the music at the same time, but everyone else. But so let's kind of.
Mac, how about latex? Ooh, should I make something called Tay-Tex, which is like really awkward, stretchy fabric? No. Okay, sometimes you just need to say things out loud.
So let's kind of rewind back, because you mentioned college. How is it that you did get into like all the things you got into, like meaning music and things? Oh. You mentioned theater. Like, did you get your degree in theater?
Sure. So I was a theater major, musical theater minor, and I've always been super nerdy. As most of you know, I grew up super fat and ugly, had an eye patch for 8 years. It was tragic.
All right. Back to the eye patch.
Do you not know this?
I do not know this. I've never heard the story. So give the story, if nothing more. I don't. Maybe I've heard it and I just forgot about it. But.
Sure. I don't expect you to remember everything about my life. It's okay. We're getting there.
Yeah. That's hence the point of the interview. So eye patch.
Yes. So basically, I was born with crossed eyes and had to get surgery. And then when you have surgery, it severs the muscles, but then your eyes are still used to being together. I know you're staring at my eyes. This is what everyone does to see if they're.
No, I'm actually just. I'm not even staring at your eyes. I'm just staring at your face, just because you're talking, and I'm being polite. And
look at you, polite with fancy clothes. Hey there.
Yeah, I'll be ready for the ball soon.
But yeah, so I got the surgery, and then you have to wear an eye patch for many years to uncross them. And I also, even to this day, I've had weight issues. I was 250 pounds at 13, terrible acne, short male haircut because my mom told me that was cool. I had cornrows for a while. Many of you have seen that picture. It was on The Soup.
Right.
They used to call me Trailer Taylor. It was just real bad and really badly bullied. So it's hilarious now that I have all these haters.
See, I'm so more intrigued about like just rocking the eye patch for 8 years.
Okay, so here's what everyone says. Everyone says, did you rock the eye patch? An eye patch when you are trying to uncross your eyes is not a cool black pirate
eye patch. Of course not.
It is a flesh-colored Band-Aid. So look at this right now. Does this look cool?
See, the thing is that like I wonder if because at times I would wonder how like I would imagine after 8 years of just wearing that, like you'd get so frustrated telling the same story, mm-hmm. you know, because people that you know, you're like, oh, yeah, they know about the cross-eyed stuff or whatever. You could kind of say
no one talked to me. I literally like ate lunch in the library and like had no friends. It's OK. We all
people
didn't even ask me questions. They were just thought I was so weird.
Just because you're like don't, you know, avoid that person. Why? Yeah. They have an iPad. Well, because the thing is that their mind, they're either A, going like, oh, she's got an iPad. She looks weird. But there's got to be that one person who's like, why the fuck does she have an eye patch? What the fuck happened to her eye?
Yeah.
Like. See, the thing is that I would imagine that after a while that you would if you end up talking to people, you'd figure out a fiction that would go with that eye patch. If nothing more than just like as a defense mechanism, just keep people from asking. And I mean, obviously you were like it sounds like you were like a kid when this was happening and this wasn't
mean up until high school.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, it was bad news. Bad news bears. I think – so my mom, I don't know if anyone else has this, was like very supportive in the sense that she was always telling me like, you're so beautiful and stuff, like almost to my detriment because I didn't realize that I was different from everyone else.
Right.
I don't know if anyone else can relate to that or if you've experienced that. But like in my mind, because I had so much of that like positive reinforcement at home – it didn't make sense to me why the kids were so mean. And it didn't make sense to me why people didn't understand or looked at me differently. Because, like, that was my normal, if that makes sense.
No, of course.
So I didn't feel the need and think about, you know, how to come up with a story or to make it cool. Because to me, I was just like, why aren't they talking to me?
Right. Because in your mind, you've been told. And rightfully so. I mean, because ultimately, I mean, every mother, you know, loves her kid. Mm-hmm. You know, and some to their... you know, detriment, some to they're not. But like for me, kind of going to high school and I think middle school was when I tried to be cool. And I put that in big giant quotation marks because mm-hmm. like even in middle school, I was playing Magic the Gathering and doing a bunch of dork stuff.
Yeah. Pokemon cards.
Hell yeah. No, but middle school was when I was trying to date or something and trying to be, you know, part of the cool hip kids, whatever the hell that meant back in 90, mm-hmm. whatever the fuck. And by about high school, I guess something clicked. Just like, why am I even bothering? And by about high school is when I started just sort of being me. And that weird, because I get like the weird part for me was that, like in high school, I was as much of a geek as I was a punk.
And so you had some punk. That's cool.
Oh yeah, no, because in high school, like I got introduced to, like Bad Religion and NoFX mm-hmm. and like you know a bunch of just you know that kind of music style. And so for me, it was always weird of that I could talk to a bunch of these punks as well and have this conversation with them. And then, like, I think, like, one year I met, like, I think it was a senior. I forgot the guy's name. But he had, like, a mohawk and everything. Uh-huh. And I was wearing at this time, this tells you how fucking much of a dork I was. I was wearing a shirt that said, Got DCSS. And on the back was, like, so I know this will make no sense to you, but to quickly sum it up.
Sure.
That essentially was the code that broke the copy protection on DVDs.
God, that's awesome. That's so funny.
And so on the back of the shirt was literally the C code that was like referenced in the library and like had the blurb there. So it was, you know, because ultimately that's what was such a bad code at the time was that it was actually legal. And it was like, you uh-huh. know, it was my like weird punk way of being a dork. Like, yeah, you know, fuck the man. I'm wearing a DCSS shirt.
This is so adorable. This is hilarious. I love the dork level here and that you think that this was being a rebel. It's just
it
awesome.
Was. It was my, it was
all
my
of
one
it is
thing.
Just totally because
I had to, the thing is, like, I had to explain what every time people was like, what the fuck is DCSS? I had to explain, well, let me tell you about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act the DVD and decryption. Content scrapping says, like, I went through a full fucking spiel. There's only one kid that I ever encountered that knew what the fuck that shirt was.
Okay.
And he was wearing at the same time an Atari shirt. And it so happens this guy was actually a punk. He was actually a senior at the time. And I was, cool. but either a junior. And I was just like, you know what the shirt is? Mm-hmm. It was more like that moment is like rock and roll. And it was such a weird thing of having this conversation with a guy that had an Atari shirt that was like a video game player, but also into punk music and everything else. And so it kind of helped me understand like, oh, I can kind of be both and not have to really worry about, you know, aww, what the fuck people think about me.
That's really cool. I'm glad that you found that. No, that's awesome. I mean, I
miss
doing
that shirt too.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do a GoFundMe to get Robert a new DCSS shirt.
I don't even know who makes it anymore. I think at the time it was made by Jinx. I think. It's so funny. Like how many like weird nerd. I mean, yes, you've seen the apartment and you see.
I wish y'all could see this. I mean, I'm just surrounded by action figures right now, and I'm loving it.
You're surrounded by. I had a friend of mine, and I know you guys can't see off the camera, but I'm staring at it. Who gave me? I think it's like her. She was moving. She worked at like a bookstore here uh-huh. in Austin, like one of like the last ones that wasn't like owned by a UT campus or whatever.
Yeah.
And as it was going out of business, she ended up picking up all these like
she pretends to
set up
a
GoFundMe, of course, because why would you dare set up one? As like her last gift, she kind of like bought a whole bunch of these ones, and she gave me like Edgar Allan Poe,
okay,
William Shakespeare, Albert Einstein, and I think that's Da Vinci up there in the corner there. And I was like, I gotta set these up because this is a weird menagerie of people just hanging around next to Vincent Valentin from Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, it's so true. It is really fantastic. I love it. I just love being surrounded by
okay.
the nerd stuff.
So let's go back. Okay, so eye patch gets removed. How do you then get into theater school then? Because I mean, obviously, not because of a bad way, but if you've already kind of had this sort of existence of sort of being, you know, not the shun person, but just the, you know, don't go around Tay over there. She's
outcast.
Yeah. How did you get to something that requires you to essentially perform again from people?
Sure. Thank you for asking that. So since elementary school, was always in choir and
okay.
like always absolutely loved music. I was in, you know, like the advanced third grade choir. So that was always a given. And then I was a theater major too. And even in high school, even though I didn't have a lot of friends, I worked really hard. And so I was in like both varsity choirs. I was president of the show choir, president of the drama club, all these really cool things.
You'd be surprised how many people like I knew. I always felt like the weird. It's funny that you mentioned the all these cool things. Like I always felt like the weird weird one that wasn't in band and in drama, because I hung out with a lot of people who were part of drama club or part of band, the marching band or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was like the weird outcast of their group because I like you're like. So where'd you guys go? Oh, we went on a competition in wherever the fuck. And I'm like, oh, cool. And they have all these stories. I feel like I'm like the outsider looking in as the weird kind of dorky kid among the other dorky kids. So
yeah.
You say that like oh, the cool thing is like I kind of wish I was part of that stuff back growing up, to be honest.
The band kids were always really cool.
Yeah.
Band was like something I couldn't touch. But yeah, I agree. It seemed really cool. Varsity choir hype. That's hilarious. You get to do it now because I'm telling you all about it. You can relive it.
For sure.
No, it was really fun. And there was just never a question in my mind. Like, both my parents went to law school and I really enjoy English literature. And like, there were some other interests I had, but it was just never a question that I was going to be an arts major. So because my parents actually met at Yale Law School, pressure. Being an orchestra, we got to go to theme parks for competition.
That's why. That's awesome, always a thing. Zach. I heard so many, like, the stories I hear of band camp and band people waver from, either A, they went to a competition and they did their thing at a theme park, to we snuck vodka on the bus with because it looked like water, and it was just like it would always run that gamut of just like people who were like either completely getting hammered or like, no, we actually had fun, and it was a weird kind of thing of just hearing all these stories.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry. Okay. So no. Yale law.
Oh God. Yale law. But yeah, no, some people were so cool, and I wish that I was like on the choir trips and stuff drinking. I didn't drink till I was 18, and I was with girlfriends, and this is kind of weird. We like got in like tutus and like drank at my dad's apartment and then watched a Disney movie, and then like we're on the balcony feeling cool.
What Disney movie did you watch? I know you know it.
Oh, Lion King.
So you're like the
sexy Disney movie.
So you're like, you're sucking down Everclear, just like circle of life. Of course it was. Of course it was. You're 18. You're 18. Of course it was Everclear.
Oh my God, that was it.
I know which one it was, because of course it was Everclear. It's always Everclear. It's never like any. No one ever says when they start drinking, if they start drinking. Like, and I'm not even a drinker. I'll put that out there, but. No one who I've ever met when they started drinking wasn't like, oh yeah, I started straight with whiskey. Like, no one goes to whiskey or to it was Jaeger all the way. It's always something. It's always like, oh, Everclear. Because for those of you who've never seen Everclear, it is, for the lack of better words, just rubbing alcohol with some flavor.
Oh my God. And I didn't know that it was like 110% proof or whatever. So I swig it from the bottle.
Yep.
And then had to put my mouth under a sink and couldn't speak for 4 minutes.
Yep.
It closed down my vocal cords. Possible title, The Circle of Everclear. The Circle of Everclear. It burns your throat.
Yeah.
I'll write it.
I think one of like the trashy drinks with Everclear, it's like Everclear Mountain Dew. I think that's one. I think that's actually.
I love me some Diet Mountain Dew though. Anytime I go to Home Depot, they always have Diet Mountain Dew for some reason, and I always get it.
God, no one ever starts with the hard stuff. I mean, Everclear only because it's clear and it seems like this kind of lighter drink, and of course the big reason is that. Well, you can probably sneak it in and make it look like, because it looks like water. It doesn't look like.
And it's so cheap. It's like $4 for a giant. Because
like I said, it's just rubbing alcohol with like some type of like something to dilute it so you don't blind yourself.
Oh God, right? And that's what's so crazy about drinks and drugs too. Like I have, I can't even remember, not raved, rolled. I've rolled once, and it's this, but like, you're always like, oh my God, like, is there rubbing alcohol in this? Like, it's just, you're so scared to drink things. And yet here we do all the time.
Well, cause there's, I mean, I'll put it this way, and this is, apparently you got to try Wild Turkey Mountain Dew. It's an adventure maker. I don't even want to know what
the adventure maker. That sounds like a song too.
It's like Hunter S. Thompson met, some fucking X Games guy. That's exactly what that drink is. It's a Hunter S. Thompson X Games. all right, so going back to the thing. Okay, so you always knew you were going to be a theater major, everything else.
Oh, yes. Always knew. Because my parents met at Yale, it was kind of pretty much in the bag that I was going to go to a good school. So only looked at top 25 universities. So top 25 universities that had a really good theater or music program. So I applied to like 12 places, Carnegie Mellon, Michigan, NYU, USC. Got into a bunch of different ones, but I love college football. Huge, huge college football fan.
Sure.
And like Carnegie Mellon, you know, some of those don't have a football team.
Yeah, they're not necessarily known for their strong, you know, teams.
Yes,
in the NCAA.
They're not. And I say this and it is completely true. I went to visit USC. I walked on campus. The sun was shining and they were having a bake sale. And I said, this is my place. The bake sale made my college decision.
Okay, what part of the bake sale made you? Because it's not just, I mean, like in my head, I imagine bake sale and like, you know, like five tables at the most. Like, was this like a grand bake sale of sorts? Or like what was the bake sale that convinced Tay, this is my destiny, this is where I need to, you know, this is where I'm going to spend my collegiate career? Was it just a, you know?
No, it was a small, two people behind it, brownies and cookies, both. But I was like, how freaking cute is this?
Okay.
That like these people are having a real bake sale and there were people there engaging and it was friendly and smiling. Was it weed brownies? No, it wasn't weed brownies. I don't think. I don't know. I was with my dad.
That'd be amazing if like, oh, you want to have a bake.
Yeah.
It's just some guy's like bake sale. Like, do you want to buy it? Yeah, what the fuck are you going? No, it's like, oh my God, bake sale. Like, yeah. Here you go.
I thought it was adorable. And they were like raising money for their college team. And I just, I thought it was so cute.
That's cool. That's definitely cool. Okay. So then, So obviously you majored in theater. What was your favorite class in college? I realize I'm asking this now just as a thing because I'm trying to figure
out. No, it's interesting. Musical theater, I got to study with Jason Robert Brown, who is a Tony Award winning, like the top composer right now on Broadway.
Oh,
it
Jesus.
Is ridiculous.
What has he worked on? I feel like. I feel like the complete outsider now, but I'm curious now.
No, it's okay. The last 5 years, 13, Parade, Honeymoon in Vegas.
Okay.
So, you know,
but
Broadway.
If he's a Tony, if he's, you know, I mean, I know enough about Broadway that I know that Tony is the big giant award for that. Mm-hmm. So if he's a winner of that, then for sure he's got to have at least some clout behind him.
Oh, yes. It's huge. You know, it's with Broadway now, it's hard because so much is revivals and you don't hear that much about the original new works. But the ones that he's done have done very well. So he was doing – he only taught very rarely. Like, I can't remember the word now, but it's like only coming in for a semester, you know, and doing like a small group.
Right.
There's some word about when that happens.
But for sure.
Whatever. So yeah, he only took 10 people. And
oh, wow.
Throughout college, I always really excelled in acting. And I'm kind of in that now a little bit, trying to figure out what I want to do, because not at all in like a bragging way, but just in conversational way. I actually, like, according to other people, am a good dramatic actress, and I always get a lot of accolades, and I did really well in school. So, like, people kind of want me to be an actress, but I've always loved music. And
right.
So I was known more as an actress at the beginning of college, and I would do some musicals, but I didn't always have the best voice or, you know. And so getting into his class was such a huge moment for me, and I learned so much working with him. I just cannot even describe. And he gave me so much confidence, and he was so great to me, and the other people in the class were fantastic. And he's seen Mass Text. I talk to him all the time still, and send him my crazy videos, and he's great about keeping in touch. But yeah, I think getting into that, I was like, you know what? I can take over the music scene by storm. Like, I can do stuff.
Yeah.
I can put out an opera cover. I can do whatever the fuck I want.
For sure.
Yeah, and it just gave me confidence.
Well, because even having like that kind of class, like if it's just 10 people and you're talking to somebody who's not just been in the field,
mm-hmm.
but has because Broadway's that weird thing where it's a combination of making something entertaining, making something creative, making something that, but at the same time you got to fill those seats and kind of, you know, have people come in. So
right, I mean, commercially right now Broadway is sort of a disaster, and I'm really trying to figure out how to help it.
Well, it's in a weird place because I'll put it this way, when Broadway was the thing, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, like in my head, I always think of the movie The Producers, or actually
yes.
even the play The Producers, and even the fact that they recorded that The Producers. I always think of this sort of, you know, you have a vision of what Broadway is, and sometimes it's silly and sometimes it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
But Broadway right now didn't have, like, Broadway at a certain time didn't have to compete with movies. you know, in a very big way. But now that we have this world of not just movies that you can go watch, but even the ability to have a Broadway play and it's telecasted to, you know, theaters across the world, you know, across the country, that how does that work into the equation of like, well, now we have a camera that's there mm-hmm. that could be floating around at certain points, and now we have to pay attention where the camera is, even though you may not think of that when you're making a set within a musical of some sort, you know?
Sure. Maybe then that leads to more Broadway movies or films.
Ash says Broadway is too localized. No mm-hmm. one wants to pay $600 to fly to New York to see one play. Sometimes there are plays yeah. I wish I had paid $600 to see. Like I wished, and as a Monty Python fan, I would have killed to go and see the Holy Grail.
Spamalot.
Spamalot. I would have fucking killed.
I saw it, and it
I would have killed
but
to see Spamalot.
The soundtrack. Honestly, listening to the soundtrack, I was so looking forward to it because I'm in love with that soundtrack. It's almost as good as seeing it just because the songs are so funny and
yeah.
good. And you kind of can guess what they're doing. They're like yeah. riding around yeah. the same courses.
If you're a smart enough Python fan, you can kind of fill in the gaps pretty yes. easily. And that's sort of what would happen. Like, I'd love to see that. I still want to see Book of Mormon one of these damn years.
I haven't seen it either, which is so bad as a musical theater major.
Right.
But like every time I want to, like, it was in LA, but I was in LA. Like, I can just never really match up with it.
Because, like, that's, I mean, cause obviously, like, the joke is always, like, you know, we think of musical, everyone says, oh, like, Cats and whatnot. Like, mm-hmm. that's the joke. But I'm like, there's so many interesting musicals. I'm like, I wish I'd kind of, you know, saw, like I said, like, Book of Mormon is one of them, Spamalot.
Mm-hmm. Legally Blonde, and I was
so judgmental.
I didn't realize
there was Legally Blonde. Wow, I didn't realize there was one.
Yeah, there was. I was so judgmental going in. My sister wanted to see it, and I was like, this was years ago. I was like, I don't want to go see Legally Blonde. Oh, my God. The most entertaining, fantastic show. The music is so smart. It's so witty. So that's another great one for people who just want to go and have fun. But it is really expensive. I am all for filming more Broadway musicals, like Into the Woods came out. The Last 5 Years by Jason Robert Brown was actually turned yeah. into a film. But we have to have directors directing it who are familiar with the musical
yeah,
theater genre.
I would fully agree.
Les Mis, to me, was a total mess because you had these... Someone who doesn't understand storytelling through song, it's a very specific structure in how that works. So to just have like super close-ups on someone for 6 minutes singing a song in Broadway, you get an entire stage.
Yeah.
Your eye gets to wander. You get to take in the world. So to like, while Hugh Jackman is a great actor, to just sit right here on him for 6 minutes through this really long song, it just got so boring because they didn't know how to create the world
as
the songs were going.
I will agree with you there. It's... A lot of times when I watch a musical recorded, it is hit and miss. I mean, mm-hmm. like, you know, I always brought The Producers as an example.
Yeah.
I love The Producers, but, you know, I love it because I think Nathan Lane, I think that's a...
Yes, my everything.
He's one of the guys
I call myself the female Nathan Lane to myself.
Well, because, like, I'm already a huge fan of Matthew Broderick in general, just, you know, Ferris Bueller's Day Off and things mm-hmm. like that. And so I was definitely attracted. But Nathan Lane's just so goddamn fucking talented. Like, he's one of those guys I'm just like... How is it that everything's working out for you? Because it's just like he's fucking funny. He's mm-hmm. he's got a voice. He's able to project, but act. You know, emote and everything else. Just like God damn it, you're like a vaudevillian star. And it's amazing.
Oh, he really is.
But you know, but then there's some that I've watched like Les Mis, as you mentioned, just like that, or even like. Like, I remember the one for me that I thought was the worst, mm-hmm. and I had to watch this for like when I was on theaters because one of my at the time I think the girl I was dating wanted to go see it was the Phantom of the Opera.
I love Phantom.
Which Phantom's great, but like the movie they made of it was horrible.
So bad. So
it was horrible. It was like not only a were the like the tricky part with making a musical in a film that I will say at least I think Les Mis did a better job at was that. They at least took the time to figure out how can make these sets work out in a mm-hmm. film sense. Because in theater, you know, you kind of forgive a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, because there's theaters that don't have any sets and you kind of have this sort of, you know, avant-garde kind of feel. And you can get away with that on the theater. You can't get away with that on film.
Sure.
It just doesn't work. It's, you know, the suspension of disbelief disappears. Unless you're like really trying to do something artsy and you kind of have to understand that's what you're watching, it'll vanish quickly.
Yeah.
With Phantom of the Opera, the movie... All those sets look like just the most fake things ever. Like,
I know. And Emmy Rossum, like, I haven't seen too much of her work, but I just thought she had no conviction. It was just yeah. like this blank stare, like, is there a Phantom of the Opera?
And the thing is, like, I have seen the, you know, and this, you know, I've seen the, like, the recording they did, of, like, in Toronto uh-huh. of the play. I'm like, man, If ever I go, if ever it's playing, I don't think it's playing anymore these days, but, or is it?
Actually, it is surprisingly, oh, and I'm sure there'll be something that comes through Austin. I mean, it's always
I would,
in New York.
I mean, because, like, there are scenes mm-hmm. in that I think are intriguing. Like, I like the idea that they actually drop a chandelier in the performance, like, live. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's something about that just crashing sound that just, like, man, I wish I could be part of that, because I've seen it so many times of recording, which, like, I wish I could see this live, because there's something about what.
Yes, that was great. I love it. I love to hear that people want to see theater, and that you are called to see these plays and these musicals, because that it's so important to me.
Well,
because
you mentioned that you had gotten a theater that kind of thing, but when I was in mm-hmm. was doing college as an English major, like, it's always required reading to have Arthur Miller, you know, to read some, you know, Arthur Miller.
Yeah.
And, like, one of my all-time favorite things is Death of a Salesman. I've always loved that play.
It's a great story.
And, you know, The Crucible's up there as well. So, you know, mm-hmm. even though, and, again, you know, I could be, you know, with William Shakespeare, for Lord's sake, because I took a class on him.
Yeah.
And there's certain things I love about it. Like, I would love, I'd kill to see fucking Hamlet performed live, like, by, like, some, like, if ever I could go to, like anywhere, like, the Globe Theater, I would fucking kill to see, like, Hamlet or, like, Macbeth or something, some just crazy Shakespearean thing done by, like, these amazing actors. I mean, some of my favorite actors are all Shakespearean, like, like, I think the two big actors, and this is sort of interesting, that are, you know, in kind of geek culture, that are, like, either Shakespearean or just, you know, who came up as actually theater actors. One of them, of course, is Patrick Stewart.
You know,
Jean-Luc Picard, was actually, you know, touring around part of the national, like, English, like, performing Shakespeare and shit like that. Like,
God, he's incredible. Yeah.
He is. The other one, actually, is I forgot his name. I can't believe I'm blanking the name. Someone will help me in the chat room here. The voice of Batman for the animated series. He actually went to Juilliard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Awesome. And I'm blanking the name. Someone in the chat room will help me out, because I can't believe my brains think.
Yeah. As you all are sending each other that link, if someone would tweet it to me, that would be awesome. I would love, I've been keeping up a little bit. They're talking about some live action plays that were filmed and stuff. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, God, there's a lot of that stuff out
the there. Tay Allen.
we'll put links in them.
Oh, just to make sure.
What is, okay, before we kind of get into the next part of the kind of thing, mm-hmm. Mark Hamilton. No, not Mark Hamilton. That's you're thinking of you are thinking of the voice of the Joker. I'm thinking of the voice of Batman, which the name's just escaped me right now, and I'm bummed by that.
Shameless plug. No, not a shameless plug.
So let's.
I really just want the link, guys.
Kevin Conroy. Thank you, Serge. Yeah, Kevin Conroy, actually, the voice of Batman, the animated series, also the voice of the video game one, he actually did go to Juilliard, and, like, it's weirdly amazing how many of, like, dork actors who are just, like, or voice actors went to, like, really hardcore, you know, theatrical schools.
Yeah.
Like,
people are shocked when they hear that I went to USC. Like, everyone thinks that's a lie, and my commencement speech is on my YouTube channel, and they think that somehow I fabricated that. I don't know what it is about dorkness, and this is something we all have to change, and people thinking that there's a lack of education there.
Well, because everybody perceives, I'll put it this way, when people say an actor, you know, there's a certain perception of what that means. Mm-hmm. You know, they always, their mind goes to, and these are not saying these are bad actors, they are great people. But, you know, Johnny Depp comes to mind, or someone like you know, all these kind of big stars. When ultimately there's a lot of, you know, when you go to acting school, I mean, not, you know, especially like one like of that caliber, you tend to learn a lot of what makes acting, like, real acting work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know Johnny Depp's kind of gotten to sort of doing the same thing over and over again, but, like, some of my favorite performances are by him, specifically of, like I loved him in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, but at the same time, I loved him in, like, Finding Neverland, you know, when he played the sort of the writer of the Peter Pan movies and stuff like that, the Peter Pan plays, I should say.
Yeah.
How have you?
Switching hands.
You're just like, how do I? I tend to switch hands when I get tired of holding a mic that way.
Mm-hmm.
But let's kind of go kind of forward a bit and stuff. So obviously you got through college, did all your stuff. How did you then start going down the internet line? Because, I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. typically with actors, they'll go and start, you know, being extras and trying to parlay into Hollywood kind of career. You fabricated it with the skills you got by going to USC.
Mech is the guy who keeps me in check. If anyone wants to know what my real life is, just ask Mech, because he has all the secrets.
Yeah, yeah. As it turns out, you didn't go to USC. You actually, like, oh, yeah, I graduated. Like, this has all been a lie. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then how did you
Who am I? Pull down the beanie, and then I pull it up, and you're like, what?
Turns out you're actually a guy.
Oh, no. I'm just tall. I'm not tranny. I'm just tall.
I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. But anyways.
Yeah.
How did you then go? Only because, like I said, typically the route of an actor is that once they get out of school, they start, you know, trying to find actual, not saying actual performances, but just to become extras and things mm-hmm. like that. How did you then parlay to this to being like an internet thing instead?
Absolutely. So I was living in LA and I had like bright red hair and was still like a little overweight and trying to work through all that and going on auditions and just getting nowhere, working at a Cheesecake Factory. And I was dating this 30
much like all actors were much like all actors in LA.
Yep. Cheesecake. I worked at Cheesecake Factory and a Mexican Hooters. Whatever. So at the Cheesecake Factory, I was 22 and I was dating this 34-year-old punk rocker. And he had this permanently scratchy voice like this. And he was very cool and sexy. His band is called Disinfectants. That is a shameless plug. Haven't talked to him in a while, but I guess I'll plug his band.
The greatest thing about that is that sounds like there are certain band names that like my friends and I always had a joke of like trying to come up with like the coolest band names or just like mm-hmm. the most metal sounding band names. That sounds like a punk band name.
It's actually a great name, Disinfectants.
that sounds like a punk band name. That sounds like the opening act before Bad Religion kicks in. Disinfectants opening up for Bad Religion tonight, you know, that kind of thing.
It's awesome.
What is my Bad Religion? My dog. Anyway, sorry, continue. So Disinfectants.
Yeah. No. So yeah,
scratchy punk LA kid.
He was cool. It didn't work out, but he was a good guy. I just think he's in his 40s now. Ooh, yeah, I think he soon, but that's weird.
I just think he's in his 40s now, and he's like okay, so he's in his 40s.
Actually, a lot of Cause for Pause, my song, was written after him. Like, he owned a male cat. Everyone wonders where that line came from, which is, in Cause for Pause, you own your own male cat.
Right.
He did. Anyway, I digress. So I was dating him, and we would stay up late watching these Sex Pistols documentaries, and like, he would pull out his guitar.
I'm not laughing at who you dated. I'm laughing at that the... Man, I mean, like there are certain limits of how, like you, there are certain limits of how much punk you can be.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, he's watching Sex Pistols documentary, bust out his guitar. Great. This is like, you're getting the limit so far. Because all I needed to have is like, after you said that, like, yeah, after you watch Sex Pistols documentary, start watching Sid and Nancy or something like that.
Yeah, no, he was right. He wore black gloves with the fingertips cut off all the time. Yeah. it was a thing. But you know what? Whatever. I was 22.
No, Rock. I'm not insulting guy's style. I'm more laughing just because when it comes to making the stereotypical like punk look, so far we've ticked off all the boxes. We're getting close to ticking all the boxes off. Continue.
So. Yeah. No, absolutely. So anyway, yeah, we would talk about this and he appreciated me. I made a version, which I'm sure everyone knows here, of Mass Text in college that was like really shittily done. I have red hair. I'm running around in a tutu. And like we like filmed it with USC students. It's on my channel if anyone's drunk and wants to see it. And so I had done that and he watched it and he loved it. And he was like, this is awesome. You're like this badass chick. And he kind of just like... Because he was a musician and we were watching all these documentaries, like it really reignited that musician in me. And I was looking at my life and I blossomed in college. Obviously, I was nerdy growing up, but I got to college. I made friends and I really found myself. And I was like, what made me popular? What was fun? Like, who was that girl in college? And I looked back at Mass Text and it had gone viral on campus the year before when I had released it. I performed at a gay prom with like thousands of people. So then I did a Kickstarter and I raised money to re-record it, make a better video, the one that we all know.
Right.
The one and that's... I was like, I am going to make fucking catchy pop songs about your everyday life to hot beats. I am a funny Kesha. Like, we need to change pop music. I'm sick of the way it's going right now. We need some humor. I want some songs that are fucking relatable. And so I just did it. And so I make the video. I actually did not release the video for 2 months. And this is why, like, I believe in the universe and fate, because I really did sort of put Mass Text up on a random Tuesday without any pre-planning, because I'd been holding on to it and I'd been shopping it to record labels. And to this day, I still think that Tay Allen songs are going to be on the radio because I think the world needs some relatable pop music. But I
don't know. Maybe by the time the world catches up, we won't need radio anymore.
So true. Amen to that. I don't mean
that in a bad way. I mean that in like a, you know, the last time I heard radio, I think might have been, a couple days ago. And it wasn't even, it was like actually a talk show friend of mine said, hey, they're talking about Laser Team on there. Like, okay, cool. Let me listen to the interview.
Yeah.
And it was like one of the internet guys that are just like, this is, I literally shut it off of like, I'm not listening to radio ever again. It's such a weird thing.
People are asking.
Oh, they're talking about the age thing. I think they're talking about the about something inappropriate.
Oh, perfect.
Anyways, we can continue. So
yeah,
Mass Tex.
Yeah. So I put it up, and as many people know, I put it up on a Tuesday because that's when you release new music.
Yeah.
You, Diamond Club, found it.
What is it with Tuesday and everything being released new? Is that like, is there some, only because I realized you said like Tuesday is the new music, but like Tuesday is also when released new video games and yeah, and like everything else is Tuesday. Is there something about Tuesday that I don't know?
I'll explain it to you.
All right, because it's something I've been very curious about.
Yes, the business side of this is that back when things were sold physically, like actual physical CDs, physical games, stores would want the deliveries on Tuesday so that then they could sell Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It was too hard to get things on Monday because you couldn't make plans on the Sunday before because most places are closed on Sunday. So Monday is the day when they would get all their distribution in line, and the companies will set up the time that they would physically drive the trucks to deliver CDs. So they would come out on Tuesday, and then stores would have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday
to sell their sales,
to sell their stuff, assuming they're closed on Saturdays and Sundays.
Right.
This has changed. Music just changed releasing on Fridays. I don't really understand the reason, but that was the origin of the Tuesday release.
Because that was the one thing that always was just a weird thing, that like games would come out. I mean, there's now coming, you know, games are coming, come out in whenever, also it's Friday as well sometimes, but it was like always weird, like, man, why are all these things coming out on Tuesday? I didn't realize music came out on Tuesday until you mentioned it now, and yeah, that's why it kind of triggered my head of like, wait, games come out on Tuesday. Why? Like, and now that makes a whole lot of sense of like, you'd have this, like Monday would be the planning day, Tuesday would be like, you know, or distribution would come in Monday night or whatever.
Exactly.
And then they'd put out all the packing stuff and all the, you know, I think whatever the key things are, like the, where they have like all the displays, everything else. That makes sense. Okay.
Yes.
So you released on Tuesday, and then obviously we had Chatroom kind of found it along with the rest of the web. And
yes.
And as cool as it was definitely a polarizing video.
Oh, I mean, 90,000 dislikes. Actually, I think I'm up to 95,000 dislikes, 10,000 likes. Love you guys who like it. Team Tay. So they can jam out to the song all weekend long and then forget about it on Monday. Yep.
Yeah, that's sort of how it works.
That's true. But yeah, so I had no monetization set up. I was with no MCNs.
Right.
I barely had a Twitter. And I had to literally learn everything step by step by step. I didn't monetize the first 700,000 views because they happened so quickly.
Right.
I signed with Full Screen and that started kicking in, but that's what led to me signing with Full Screen. And again, a lot of people have heard this story. I won't go into too much detail unless you have any questions, but it was just like every day having to learn, like, oh my God, what are YouTubers? What is a vlog?
VidCon.
I went to VidCon 3 days after Mass Tex launch and, you know, performed and saw all these people and was meeting with all these different YouTubers, Smosh, right, and Joey Graceffa, yep, and all these people. And it really just like thrust me into the world. And then I started having CNN, E, like all these interviews, and I had a publicist, and the publicist was a disaster because she made me like commercial awkward. Because I can be awkward, but like me, commercial awkward, like my CNN interview, I'm like, yeah, da 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 da.
Well, because like that, it's funny because like whenever I think of interviews, everyone always, you know, goes to CNN side of things, and this is like the furthest way from CNN. But even then, I know I have seen how that's done, and I can just imagine just how that can just be awkward because you're essentially there to just say like 5 things because, you know, you're at the top of the hour and then they got to go to like, you know, the news cycle event, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, they actually gave me a lot of time. I think it was a five minute interview and they showed a bunch of clips of the song. So yeah, they were really gracious to me. But it was still awesome. It was still me, but like Night Attack or at the time, Not Safe for Work show, was really the first time I was able to be myself. And like, I put on my glove and I was like, these guys are dicks and I'm going to be sassy. Oh, like, no, I like them, but I didn't really know them yet.
No, because we just don't give a shit. I mean, like, the thing is that, like, even, you know, that being the second incarnation of the thing, like, we still, you know, we just don't give a shit. Like, not in a bad way. Like, mm-hmm. we don't give a shit. Like, no, we're just going to, you know, we're the internet. We you know, the beauty part of being on the internet and sort of making content online is that you don't have to. I mean, yes, you can be commercial. Yes, you can try to figure out how to make money. And that's not to say that there aren't people who haven't.
Mm-hmm.
But what seems to resonate the most on the internet is pure unadulterated honesty.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if you're like this commercial entity, like sometimes I feel it, something missed the point of that. And so,
yeah, you're totally right. And honestly, like, you guys in Diamond Club and the chat realm, like, really helped me realize that. Like, I kept coming on to the show with Brian and Justin and kept getting to be myself, and it was the only time. And then I made friends, and then I go and realize a bunch of people live here in Austin.
Sure.
We go to Dragon Con, and like, I'm just like, you guys are my people, and yeah, I'm so honored to be a part of the awesome community.
Thing. It's interesting because I feel that sometimes it's detriment on YouTube that because a lot of the talent is in LA,
mm-hmm.
that a lot of what is lost is that it still has a sort of LA feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm not saying that LA is a bad place. LA is a great place, whatever. But
nah, I didn't like it.
There are some interesting people out of LA. I'm just saying that. But a lot of times, I feel that CNN has all the time in the world.
Oh my God, Serge, I would love for you to camp out for the next Tay album, Untexted.
Is that what it's going to be called?
Oh, it is, yeah. Untexted, period.
Put a hash in front of it.
Yes, yes. It's like when I finally have enough songs to make an album, even though no one releases albums anymore and everyone just does singles, whatever.
Well, I think people do, like, it's such a funny thing because, like, we have enough, like there's one constant of this show, and that is somehow getting a lot of musicians on here.
Mm-hmm.
But every musician, like I, it's funny you bring up the singles thing. I think we're in a different era of music in general, because like in like the early 90s and stuff like that, it was always about the music video.
Mm-hmm.
Like, music video was nothing more than this thing that promoted the album, which I always felt kind of weird, because there are some songs I think their music videos are actually, like, you know, works of art in their own right. Like,
oh,
you know,
God, yeah.
Like
Safety Dance.
Well, even like Smooth Criminal. Like, I know, you know, obviously Michael Jackson bringing up Thriller, but like Smooth Criminal is just a fucking phenomenal video. But then there's even, you know, some ones that are just like kind of weird cultural touchstones. Like, I mean, like Nirvana Smells Like Teen Spirit. It's just such a weird music video, but it's, you know, of that.
Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart, the literal version. Everyone go watch that right now. Like, leave me. I'm not that interesting. Go watch Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart, the literal version.
Mex has a take on me in the chat. We could talk about music videos all day. But I'm curious before we kind of, because we're almost out of time here. We're almost at the hour mark of the proper interview.
Yeah.
What was the hardest thing kind of getting up to speed, especially because you mentioned that African YouTube, you had to do Twitter, all this stuff, like, you know, kind of basically just, you know, you're throwing the deep end of social media. What was the hardest thing to kind of come up to speed on after Mass Text sort of became this very crazily viewed thing?
Sure.
I mean, obviously, you're proud to speak now, you know, Twitter, Facebook.
Hard things.
But I'm curious, like, what was, like, only because, especially as a person who's never, you know, never looked at that world at the time or that deeply, like, just getting tossed into the deep end of that. Just like, well, you know, congratulations, you know, you made a video.
Yeah.
And now everyone's watched it and everyone's kind of weighed in on it, whether, you know, bad or good or otherwise.
Sure.
Now you got to catch up. And it's like, it's about making it sound like you didn't have, like, Twitter set up. You didn't have any of these sort
I had nothing. Yeah.
And you're sort of like tossed in the, here's 700, because you mentioned that, like, I didn't monetize it, you know, before 700,000 views.
Yes.
Like, I would kill for that kind of, for anything close to that number. You know, there's people who now who would fucking scream at, you know, scream the high heavens that they got, you know, just 1,000 people watching something.
Mm-hmm.
But getting to that sort of limit of just, again, that, like, what was the hardest thing to kind of get up to speed on?
Absolutely. So
I'm actually really curious what it was.
Yeah, no, and thank you. That's a good question, and as I think I have a good answer for you. So it went viral 2 years ago,
right?
And that is important because viral meant something different than it does now.
Yeah.
Viral 2 years ago, like, things still, like, went viral, and that meant something. We had Rebecca Black's Friday, Carly Rae Jepsen. Like, things would go viral and they would be talked about for a couple months. Now something goes viral every day.
Right.
Like the are you seeing the blue or the gold dress? I mean, going viral means nothing anymore.
Well, and- I think the stat was like, I think it's 24 hours of video footage is uploaded to YouTube, I think, every hour.
Oh, God.
Or something like that. Some crazy number set for some crazy value. So you'll never, ever, even if you wanted to, you'll never watch every bit of video on YouTube at this point in time.
Yes.
You'll
for
never.
Sure.
There's no way.
Absolutely.
But anyway, so yeah, your reps were like viral then, you know, like 2 years ago. I don't even know if it's still around, but like this, God, 2 years ago was 2014. I think it was like, was the soup still around at that point?
Yeah, no. I was the top three worst video of all time on the soup. Thank you very much. The soup was definitely around. Joe McHale had me on the soup 4 times. He loved to make fun of me. He called me a man. So did you. You're Joe McHale. Oh my God, it comes full circle.
And honestly, I just want to mention that. I mean, my comment was that it was because you're. The joke I usually make is to say the opposite of what I see in front of me. Like I mean, you're obviously. I'm digging myself deeper in the hole, but fuck it. Let's hit bedrock at this point. Because the reason I'd said that was it was to consider you in any shape or form a man would be ridiculous.
Well, thank you.
That was my objection, man. Like that's the joke is that like you know it you know it's like that's the gag is that why would you even think that she you know that this beautiful woman in front of me here would be anything but just keep on digging. I'm almost at bedrock soon.
You're good. Thank you.
Oil.
No, I totally know what you're talking about, and I was definitely kidding with you. But anyway, to answer your question,
just keep digging.
I'll save you. Life no, preserver. Man.
That's okay. You got to hit bedrock someday.
Oh, gosh. But yeah, so viral actually meant something. And oh, you know what? I had my answer for you until we went on that tangent. What was the hardest thing? The hardest thing back then, because it was 2 years ago, was coming up with quick content. And I'm sure I lost so many potential fans, viewers, what have you, because now I could have just fucking taken my amazing iPhone 6S Plus with my 4K camera, put it on my $15 tripod that I got on Amazon Prime, and Periscope myself till the cows come home.
For sure.
While I was trying to figure out how
to
do stuff.
You know, what the hell you're trying to do, at least be this personality of some sort, and then parlay that into whatever you're going to do.
Exactly, because for me, what I do, what's difficult, and like I love those of you who tell me that I should have a Twitch channel and go on Patreon, and like I love you so much for that, and I am considering it, but my bread and butter, my gold, what I love to do, what you all love, are my music videos.
Right.
And music videos, you have to write the song.
Yep.
You have to find a producer to work with. That normally costs like $1,000. If you're me and you know how to hustle it, that's cheap. Then you've got to record the song, edit the song. Then you've got to shoot the video. You've got to plan the video, locations, extras. Then you've got to edit the video. So I was on this trajectory where it would take like 6 months.
Yeah, music video is a lot of product. You know, a lot of people don't. A lot of people who haven't worked in any video production, I always have this with Scam School because I do audio for them.
Awesome.
And I'll always, you know, when we have guests on who are just like, you know, people are like, we're fans of Scam School. Awesome. Come on on. You know, come to the show. You're friendly.
Yeah.
They'll never realize how much work goes into just one episode of Scam School, at least when it comes to shooting it. The idea of you know, doing the trick, you know. Going to some, you know, doing some type of fake break and then recording more. But even things like, you know, we'll have pickup shots for if there's something that Brian drew or whatever, that he'll have to redraw and kind of pick up again. If there's some type of card trick that was done, you know, get a zoom in shot of that and get that there. That'll then be cut to later in the full production of that. If, you know, and everything else, obviously the audience who watches it will never ever see what that goes on or what shots happen. You know, you'll just kind of watch your final product. Same thing with music videos, is that there's a lot of work that goes in, because you mentioned that, you know, it's not just in the recording the song, because even the recording the song, then it's like, well, you gotta get it mastered, you gotta get it, you know, if there's any type of backscoring and everything else, you gotta hear that, get the levels right. That's just the song alone. And then go and say, all right, now we gotta figure out a music video. And if you're smart about it, you know, you tend to, you know, theme it accordingly, or you have some type of idea of what you want to do.
And our phones and the cameras were not the same. I mean, it was just a very, like, Snapchat didn't exist. There was no Instagram video. So for me, getting out content, I really only had like a Facebook page, Instagram, and Twitter. And Twitter has changed a lot too. So basically, that I think was really difficult. And at the time, I literally was working at this place called Baja Cantina. It was a Mexican Hooters. Like every cent I made going towards funding the new step, I was sharing a bed with a girl, sharing a full size bed in the middle of Hollywood, still paying $500 a month with no parking, no air conditioning and kitchen. That's Los Angeles, sharing a bed, trying to make this work. And so like that 6 months of my life and like that hustle just to make clean my room, which was the next video to come out after Mass Text. And then I'm dealing with having to learn all about the internet. I'm dealing with people hating me.
For sure.
I mean, we know that I don't care about that. And I kind of love it. And it's great. And like, I love the fans, but that's a lot too of me just being like, oh my God, like I have like these comments of people telling me to kill myself.
Yeah.
There's just much. And then trying to work and pay and make the video. And we all know we don't make any money off of the videos. So.
No. Well, for so here comes your quick lesson on internet advertising and advertising in general. Just a really quick lesson because, again, I've talked about this about a billion, 20 times. First and foremost, I think my channel is monetized, so none of this matters anyways. But what Taya was sort of mentioning and why she's like no one gets paid, ultimately the way it works is that whenever you see a video on YouTube and you see that ad and you're like, oh, this sucks, whatever, I have to skip that kind of thing. What's happening behind the back end is that basically whenever – I'll say this. If you ever see a video that's got about a million, let's see, what is it? Because it's cost per melee. I think
I know where you're going. I'm really open with the statistic. On my 4 million plus channel views, I've made $2,500.
Right.
And I have the top ads. I have L'Oreal. I have Nike. I have full screen top ads.
Yeah, because basically like CPM's a term. It's I think it's every 1,000 views. If you're lucky,
10 cents.
If you're lucky, 10 cents. If you're lucky, 10 cents. If you're a god, like a dollar or $1.50. And that's kind of the weird thing about internet ads, only because like we're to its detriment and to its advantage, the internet is highly trackable. I know you've seen this before, and I've definitely seen it on my channel. But Google gives you analytics up the ass.
Yeah, but their analytics that you're having to trust at blind faith value,
right?
And
for sure, but to the point like right now with this YouTube, this live video, I could go right now to my analytics and check where the drop off happened. Like where like this video, this, and everyone just stopped watching here. Like you
but
could.
That's
I know.
A cluster mind fuck too, because then you're seeing this, and like again, here I am by myself. I have no manager. Yep. I have no friends who know the internet. I'm looking at these retention rates and stuff.
Yep.
I let it influence some of the videos. Yep. I tried to vlog, and I was so awful at vlogging. And it's just. The analytics are great, but what you said before, and it's so true, that like honesty, finding your people, like that is just so much greater. And
I'm
so caught up in the analytics, and the analytics don't really mean
anything.
Well,
you could chase that analytic pipe a lot.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's valuable. Don't get wrong. Some analytics are kind of valuable. Like it's for me, like I'll see occasionally I'll have a viewer in Japan and they're like, oh, hey, I know why they saw that, because it was this video that did this. And it's good. Some of them are very useful.
Yeah.
Some of them are just, pointless. And they're pointless to me because much like you, I'm not in the mindset of trying to chase this million view type thing.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to, appeal to a certain niche, and that niche sort of, does this. Because if you think of like even your, any of your big channels that exist, they tend to chase a certain way. But regardless of that thing, is that even seeing all that can be kind of scary, because you'll see all these numbers are just like everyone's viewing it from here and this and that. And then then we get to the whole likes and dislike kind of bar.
Yeah.
And then the comments and everything else. Because dealing with that, especially as your first introduction to the internet, I mentioned the joke of like you get thrown in the deep end, but that's quite is the deep end, because it's sort of this,
you
got the brunt of both the good and just the complete and utter awful part of the internet. And not only that, you're on YouTube, and that's even brings its own weird thing. And then at the point you're at, when it was, people could still be, people can be anonymous now still, but people were hyper anonymous then, and just, didn't care if they were just, like you mentioned, be like, kill yourself. But there's got to even be, that's probably the most tame of comments you saw.
Yeah. Oh, I get kill yourself every day. but you're completely right. And if you look at my videos now, like my viewership, like views have died down because I'm no longer trying to make like as cookie cutter content.
Right.
And it never was. Like, it's always been me and authentic. But like now I just like really don't give a fuck. Like, right. I kind of thought about it before. And now, but I've realized it's like, okay, well, what's a view? What is a lurking view?
Well, that's also the interesting
thing.
What does
that mean? Well, I'd rather make stuff that I love, that my fans love, right. that we think is like weird and awesome and cool, or do stuff like this with you, than chase getting a bunch of views where those people were never going to follow me anyway. They were never going to like my music.
Well, because even as part of the thing, I think that like I've never taken any of the YouTube Academy stuff, but I know, like, you know, I hear enough from other people who have that, like, one of the things they say is do what you want to make.
Yeah.
You know, don't chase, first off, don't chase the views, because ultimately views don't matter. Even on that, and now with like YouTube Red, it's starting to come the idea of like, you know, watch length matters more mm-hmm. in the algorithm than that. That's why like a lot of Let's Play people started getting big, and video game people, because they have these like long hour-long things.
Sure.
And so, you know, people started watching these hour-long videos, and that started, you know, skewing the algorithm that way.
Ooh, this was long. This will do well, huh?
Right. Well, that's well, because like now we're coming to the point now, you know, where internet content is at this sort of crossroads, I'm going to say. One, because TV's kind of – not because TV's going bad, but TV's, you know, doesn't have as solid of – is very – I'll put it like TV's very hyper-fragmented right now.
Dying.
You know, you don't have – you have certain channels that are doing really interesting things, and then you have certain channels that are just doing the same old stuff for, mm-hmm. you know, for my mother to watch. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But the internet's becoming this sort of growing up. Like now we have – you know, people can pay for YouTube now. People can – you know, like I'm paying $11 a month to not see ads mm-hmm. on YouTube.
Yeah.
That's the limit we're at. You know, people are paying paying for Netflix to watch House of Cards.
Right.
You know, all these things that if we had talked about, let's say, I don't know, 2 years ago, back when, you know, even just 2 years ago, like mm-hmm. 2 years ago is not a whole lot of time.
No.
This wasn't the landscape we're in. And it's interesting for me, and I imagine it's interesting for you, it's just because it's coming to the point now where you're starting to realize that it's almost detrimental to just be that kind of person that searches for the viral hit, because you're mm-hmm. never going to make it,
yeah.
you know.
The secret sauce of virality is not the tech. It's that I made something that was really relatable and
yeah.
that everyone
yeah.
got on board with, whether they liked it or not. And that's what you're doing now with this podcast. And that's what Justin and Brian do so amazingly.
Sure.
That's the secret sauce.
Yeah, that ultimately is. Like, and I would you know, it's one of the things that's just like if your mission is to get as many views as possible, you have failed at there. You know, the joke I make is that there is at one point, you know, the joke I always make to people who end up trying to make anything, a podcast or whatever, you know, do what you want to do, do what you like. Like, say, yeah, but how do you get big and whatnot? I go, like, if your mission in this whole thing is to be like get rich, there are far better, you know, mm-hmm. Paths to go for that kind of money. You know,
yeah.
be a doctor, go into engineering, you know, there, you know, learn computer science. There's so many ways of like of doing that to if that's your goal. If your goal is to be rich and famous, there's so many easier ways of doing that. And I said mm-hmm. doctor, that's 8 years of college, but it's far easier sometimes than just, you know, trying to get a video, you know, trying to essentially capture lightning in a bottle and hope,
yeah.
and doing it over and over and over again. It just you can't keep that up,
can't.
You know. We are out of time. We have hit the hour mark entirely.
Oh, that was fun, though.
Tay, as always, a pleasure to have you on. Where if people do want to support you, people do want to actually somehow, you know, contribute to everything, how can they help you out? Where can they go? How can they find you beyond this little here?
No, honestly, just like when people just interact with me during the day, or they'll retweet something or send me something hilarious to retweet, that is really like the biggest thing. I mean, to me, like, this is just like all fun and heart, and the more weird we get together, the better. Oh, and thank you, Snowshoe. That is my Twitter handle. I've been using my Facebook page more. Not like I like Facebook pages, but I realized that it's like fun to actually comment with people, because Twitter, it's normally just one-on-one, and
Twitter's
we've been starting some more conversations and stuff. So my Facebook page is Tay Allen Pop Girl.
Okay.
And that is from 2 years ago, and I will keep that till I die, because Tay Allen Pop Girl is hilarious.
You roll all you want to roll. I will never judge as a person that has a name that has no relation to him and a number at the end of it. So I
yep.
will fully understand that.
Yeah.
So you can just Tay Allen Pop Girl, obviously.
Perfect.
Your Twitter is at Tay Allen.
The Tay Allen.
Sorry.
Yes, Tay Allen is a young black boy.
How it always is.
It always is.
It's always like that. Like I think the counterpart for my handle, like Vincent 404, I think in one of the channels it was like a French guy that was really into like hip hop and like strange hip hop nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what channel it was, because the thing is, there is at one point a site that you could put your name in and see what, you know, see where your social name is free.
Yeah.
And I'd see all the ones like, yep, I have that one, have that one, have that one. I'd see a service like, I've never signed up for that service before. I don't think. Let me see. Oh, shit, that's not me.
Yeah.
And I realized that's the man I fight with every time I see Vincent 404. And I finally realized who my counterpart is. I have a friend of mine who has a Twitter handle, King Kaz. And at one point he was approached by like some hip-hop artists like, hey, man, that's my Twitter handle. What are you doing with it? He didn't quite understand Twitter at all. And it was like, had missed the boat about, you know, picking up King Kaz, I guess. Tangent, there you go.
Tangent, drink.
Of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404 there in the chat rooms and, of course, Twitter. So, of course, you want to catch previous episodes of podcast and everything else, head on over to our website, cosmicray.tv/8bitlife. There you'll find the show notes, the Twitter account, which is at 8bitlife podcast. And, of course, after you bought whatever remaining things of Tay Allen's round, whenever if she has a band camp set up ever, blah, blah, blah. If you have any like spare change left over, head on to patreon.com/8bitlife and help this podcast grow bigger, better, and stronger.
Woo!
So that's it for the day. Tune in next time. Talk another geek about something completely and utterly random. Bye, people.
Bye. Beok.
This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.